Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca is about the ICC's decision to ban trans women cricketers. But really, it's about a woman who loves cricket.
Danielle McGahey and cricketer.
This episode, we talked to her about her childhood in cricket, transition, getting into the Canadian game, lack of sixes, all the tests she needed to play, and how the ICC changed the system on her.
All right. Where were you and how did you find out that the ICC had changed the regulations when it came to your eligibility?
I was actually on the way to a rubbish dump, just doing some household chores. And the lawyer from the ICC sent me an email being like, hey, can we call? And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, what's up? And then she informed me about, all the changes that they were going to make a week later. And that's when it was released to the public. So, I was literally in the car on the way to the rubbish dump.
Wow. That, I mean, in some ways, it was a rubbish decision for you. So I could, it's all very apt, isn't it? let's go back to the start. When did you first start playing cricket?
Oh, my God. I would have been maybe 5 or 6 years old in the backyard, country Victoria. In Australia, and dad just threw me a bat and a ball and said have fun. So I've been playing for a long time.
This is only going to be of interest to me, but where in country Victoria?
Seymour.
Oh wow, I'm from Epping, so I'm not too far from
just up the road.
Exactly. Did you take to it straight away? Like, obviously you played cricket in the backyard. Did you play representative cricket or school cricket, or where were you playing?
Yeah, so as soon as I could, I got myself into the under-12 competition. So I think I was like 8 years old, so that's tiny. And then went through the junior competitions, represented the Seymour District Cricket Association and worked my way through up to the Northern Rivers. And basically cricket was the sport that I loved from a very early age.
And give me an idea of you as a young cricketer. What are your highlights? What am I looking at? Dashing batting, any bowling, wicket keeping, what can you give me?
Wicket keeping and boring opening batter. Strike rate of 20 was more than enough for me. Wouldn't rush things. But also grew up where test cricket was the thing you watched every summer. So that was perfect for what I was doing.
And did you play cricket as an adult, or when you become an adult, do you sort of stop playing, or did you play all the way through?
No, I played all the way through. There was a period of when I think I was 25 where I stopped playing for a little bit. But basically, once I graduated through the junior system, I moved down to Melbourne and started playing cricket down there and represented the Mercantile Cricket Association, went to Willowfest and a few other cricketing events around Victoria, and just continued playing throughout my early adult life. And just before I moved to Canada, I stopped playing for a little bit. With the intention of actually stop playing, period. I just sort of lost love for the sport, so I was more than happy to watch it, but wasn't really keen on playing it at that point. And then I moved to Canada and things changed when I saw a cricket pitch. So I was like, nah, I gotta.
It was that simple. You saw a cricket pitch in Canada and you were like, yeah, I need to get back out there.
100%. I moved to Saskatchewan, Canada, and I didn't even know there was cricket in Saskatchewan, Canada. I knew there was some in Toronto. I knew there was some in Vancouver, but where I was, I just assumed there was none. And I was just driving around one day and saw a cricket pitch and had to stop the car and get out and walk and just make sure that it was a cricket pitch. And I was like, I need to find this club and I need to email them and I need to get back on. I miss this.
Obviously, cricket is a major part of your life, at a young age, but the other part of your story is the transitioning. Okay, so can take me through that. How does that work? At what age do you know? What age do you start to transition? Take me through that sort of history.
So for me, I knew from a really young age that I wasn't a boy. I didn't know I was a girl. I didn't know, I didn't have the terminology. Everyone just assumed I was gay, and that was what was said at school and all the rest of it. So everyone knew I was a little bit different, but it was only then when I moved to Melbourne and I started to express myself a little bit differently. But I didn't transition at that point. I think a lot of to do with that was parental influence. They they definitely had like a large hold on my life with regards to who I was. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved to Canada, that really gave me the freedom to explore new things with new friends and just try new things and find out what made me happy. And so that was late 2020 that I started my transition socially.
And how old were you then?
Oh,
22. I don't want to age you, but you're a professional athlete. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. 26. I was 26. So it'd been something I've been living with for quite some time. And I had the opportunity to start just dressing more femininely. And it was just a couple little things in life. And I really, like, it gave me such immense joy, euphoria even. And so then I started to talk to my doctor and psychologist and psychiatrist and start to go down the route of medically transitioning, which happened in May of 2021.
Okay.
And so then basically, yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. I was going to say, you talked about your parents. How did they handle it? I mean, if you said everyone kind of knew you were different anyway, it may be easier for you than it might be for some others.
Yeah, no, my parents didn't handle it well at all. They basically distanced themselves to a significant degree, and it got to the point where communicating them was really, really challenging. And we had what I would say is an honest conversation about my needs and my wants from my parental support, and they couldn't meet it. And that was October 2021. That was the last time we spoke. So we haven't actually spoken since.
Oh, wow. That's, I mean, so hard because you're going through a change in your life and then that happens at the same time. I'm really sorry to hear that. From an athletic point of view, I'm very, very interested because especially with you being 26 when you started to transition, how did you notice the transition affect you, your athleticism?
Significantly. Like, I can't stress enough how much strength I don't have now that I used to have. Like, opening a jar is literally challenging now. And I don't say that, like, facetiously. Like, I used to be able to hit sixes for fun. And now, like, I hit 1-6 at the ICC qualifiers event.
Don't worry, we're going through your stats later. I know how many sixes you hit.
But like that was like everything I had, and I was like, I just cleared the boundary. Where like once upon a time that would have been, you know, easy. It's such a significant drop off in strength. Not to even mention like the cardiovascular like change that's occurred. Like I can't run as far or as fast or as like with as much energy. And even though I'm like much fitter now, there's just those things that testosterone gives that it just dissipates within 12 months. But I'd say, you know, absolutely within 24. And so, you know, now I'm playing cricket and I'm back to that defensive way because I just can't clear the boundary. It's quite funny.
Well, yeah, at least you've gone back to your roots, I think, in that way. So that's fine from that point of view. What about when you start playing cricket in Canada? And I know there's one tournament where you go absolutely ballistic in a domestic tournament and you score a lot of runs, you know, huge average, huge strike rate, and you get noticed, obviously, by, you know, Canadian women's cricket is very, very tiny. You're going to make a very big impact. How do you go from making runs in that tournament to potentially being in the senior team?
To be honest, when I was making those runs in the tournament, I wasn't thinking about anything further. I was representing my province and my provincial region because we don't have, a bit difficult. We don't have enough women for one state or province. So we combine a few. We become the Prairies. And so I just wanted to represent them as best as I could.
Did you just say you played for a cricket team called the Prairies?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. I mean, you've got a shirt that says the Prairies on it.
Yeah, just Prairies. Yeah.
I'd be happy with that. Sorry, I didn't mean to stop you. It's just that stopped me dead. I absolutely love that. But okay, so yeah, so you start playing for them.
Yeah. So and then we had the national tournament, and that was the one where I scored all the runs, and that's when I got noticed by Cricket Canada. But I wasn't really thinking beyond. We need to win this game, and honestly, we need to show Ontario because they're the bigger cricketing province in Canada that, you know, we're not just some pushovers. And you know what? It was a lot of fun. I was batting a lot with Divya Saxena, so the national captain, and we had a great time. So it was really cool.
I'm just trying to get up the most runs in that tournament. You did very, very well. Where have I got my? Here we go. Top run scorers. I had all this saved, and I can't find it. I'm going to ask you though, because you're a cricketer, so you might know. How many runs did you make in that tournament?
I think it was 320.
And what was your average and strike rate?
So it'd be 106.67 average and strike rate maybe 180. I can't remember that, to be honest.
Can't get the website to work. Well, let's go with that. I think there was someone else with a similar kind of strike rate to you in that tournament, and then there was someone else with a slightly higher average, but you were clearly the standout. So how quickly are you tapped on the shoulder and they want to know more about you and see your passport and all these different things?
So this tournament was early August, and by early October, I was in Brazil representing Canada.
Wow.
So it was 2 months from like that tournament to literally being in Rio de Janeiro and playing against the Brazilian and the Argentinian like national teams.
What do you have to prove at that point physically? Like, take me through the science of it and how many doctors you need to go to and who pays for the doctors and how all this sort of stuff works.
Okay, so because that tournament that I played in wasn't an ICC sanctioned, like the Canadian Games weren't ICC sanctioned,
gotcha.
I didn't have to prove anything.
Oh, okay.
So basically Canada selected me and we were going to try things out, see what the reception was from fellow players and a few other bits and pieces, and then we'll go through the process. So yep. The process started January 2023 and... I had to see my psychiatrist. I had to get like written documentation. I had to see my main doctor and get, I think she provided me with like 47 pages of information of medical history to be sent to the ICC. On top of that, I had to do blood tests every single month. I had my personal trainer send off my body composition to the ICC.
Sorry to be stupid here. What is body composition?
So this is like fat percentages, muscle percentages, where my muscle, where my fat is.
But the ICC is receiving your fat percentages.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay.
They also had all information about any surgeries that I had had and information like to the millimeter of where an incision was made, like a crazy level of information. And basically they had all of this, and it took them 6 months to deliberate. We did a couple of interviews together and they needed more documents from my doctor. And then they eventually came back and said, yep, okay, you meet the requirements, which
it was 6 months altogether. And what were the interviews like? Like what kind of questions? I mean, cause you've transitioned at this point. So it's not as if the question can't be, are you planning on going back to being a man or anything like you're a woman at this point. Like it's, what kind of questions would they ask?
I wish they were cricket related. No, that is literally one of the questions because they're worried about integrity. So they're like, okay, are you, doing this, not for the benefit of playing cricket, but for your own, like you are being your true self.
All right.
And it's okay. Cause like, genuinely, I know they have that concern.
Yeah,
I think it's a concern that is based completely in fiction because no one would go through this transition just to hit a white ball in a park with a bat. Like, you're not going to do that. Like, no one would give up their parents and social life and friends and all these, like, statuses in life and all the rest of it just to play cricket, and particularly women's cricket. And I don't say that in a derogatory way, but there's
women's
no money involved.
Women's associate cricket.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like there's no money. So we're not talking about, someone trying to rig the system. Like when they're talking about these questions, it is literally just someone living their life. They have a hobby and a sport and they play and,
The blood tests and fitness and all the different things that you needed to do. Cricket Canada pay for that? Did you pay for that? Or the ICC, because they are the ones who want it. Who pays for that?
Yeah, that was all me. So every time I see my physical trainer, that's out of my pocket. Blood tests are thankfully covered by the government, so I don't have to worry too much about that. Cricket Canada really didn't have a lot of involvement other than basically just signing their name saying, yep, she's part of the Canadian setup.
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
And they, I mean, it seems like quite a progressive move from their point of view. It's a very small team, Canadian women's cricket. Everyone knows everyone. And, you were in the team 8 minutes after you arrived. Like, it's, I think we understand what level it is. And you accepted and they were happy to push forward. Because, I mean, they could have made it difficult and just not picked you, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. But I didn't have any issues within the Canadian setup. From coaches, administrators, players, everything that I was involved in, I was like, welcomed with open arms. Even now, unfortunately, I haven't heard anything from the administrators after the ban, which, I think it's probably, I don't know why. I honestly don't know why, because I'm one of their players, but they haven't reached out at all. But while I was in the team, while I was in the setup, everything was fantastic.
So you play, and you play 6 official T20 internationals. I think you played some other games as well, didn't you? Is that right?
Yeah, so that was the 4 games prior. That was when I was in Brazil in 2022, yeah.
That was the Americas tournament, wasn't it? Yep.
That's correct.
And this other one was in an ICC tournament.
Correct.
All right. I just want to go through your numbers here, because we said some nice things about you making a lot of runs before at a fast strike rate. In 6 WTIs... you made 118 runs with an average of just under 20 and a strike rate of 95. It's fair to say you mentioned this already, so I'm going to bring it up. So you can't have a go at me here. You faced 123 balls and you hit 1-6. You weren't exactly tearing up the competition. Your first major competition. I'm not slandering you. I'm not saying you wouldn't have gone ahead. My memory of women's cricket about 10 years ago was there was a 6 hit about every 120 balls in T20 cricket. That's come down quite dramatically over. So you're 10 years behind the pace is what I'm saying. So it wasn't a case of you going out there in that tournament and just hitting 6 after 6. You struggled. Your 48 was quite slow, is my memory, when I looked up that scorecard. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, that's completely fair to say. Like, the entire tournament, I did particularly struggle. The first few games, I put down the nerves. But other than that, like, I was just really struggling to find timing with the ball. So, that 48, it was okay. Didn't set the world on fire. Like,
My other question for you is, you're in a unique situation to be able to answer this. And I know there are probably some women who would be able to answer it as well, especially who grow up in areas where there isn't senior women's cricket. But you've played adult cricket with men and women. I know that the sport is slightly different and you've now played in that. I wonder, as a cricketer, how you saw playing women's cricket is different to playing men's cricket.
It depends on what level. I think at a lower sort of domestic level, I think everything's a lot more inclusive, and particularly in Cricket Canada, because we don't have a huge setup. So when you go to national tournaments, like last year I played there, we had players who were playing their like first and second cricket games at a national tournament. It's a really odd setup. But when at the highest level, it is just as competitive. There's smirks thrown around on the field. There's a bit of sledging. Like, there's all these things that, correlate to both games.
Coming from you or?
No.
You're from Victoria. I just assumed that you were throwing a couple around.
Well, I was a wicketkeeper, so, you can't take it away from me. that level is pretty similar. Obviously, the speeds are different, and there's a couple of differences in the game and how it's played. The smaller ball, the smaller boundaries, like these little tiny details. But in terms of the competitive nature on the field, it's that ICC tournament was pretty cutthroat. So
I never thought about the smaller ball. I mean, it's basically an under 16 or under 14 ball for boys. It's very similar size.
Yeah.
Do you kind of, when you're batting, does it feel any different off the bat? Like, does it ping Absolutely. In a different way? It does.
Yeah, it pings a lot harder. You can hit it a lot further.
Read out your stats. I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah, no, I couldn't. But someone like Ritu Singh could. No, it's definitely, it's a different game because it swings more. It bounces a little less and it comes off the bat a little firmer. It's only 14 grams, I think, is the difference in weight, and it's only marginally smaller in size, but it makes a huge difference.
You know, the reason you're on this podcast and the reason that you're in the news, of course, is what happens with the ICC ban, and we talked about that at the top. But there's a political side to this, which you're just a human who wanted to play cricket, and, you know, probably cricket was, I don't want to get all psychological with you. You said you had a psychologist and a psychiatrist. You're more than happy to speak to them anytime. But from a human point of view, you left cricket and then you go to Canada and you become your true self and then also go back to cricket. It kind of makes sense that clutching at something that you had beforehand. But it is very political, the issue of trans women playing sport, as women, as it currently stands. How is it for you, who is, you're just working out who you are in this, you know, and as you're coming through, you know, your surgery wasn't that long ago, your social transition wasn't that long ago, you know, we're only talking 3 and 4 years, right? And suddenly you are working out who you are as a human being, you're going back to the thing that you love, but you're also being used for political ends by people who've never met you before and don't know anything about you, and it must be just such a hard thing to deal with when you're dealing with just normal things.
Yeah, mentally it's been incredibly challenging to like wake up and know that, yeah, you know, I have, particularly like in September when the news first came out that I was going to be playing, I'd wake up, my phone would have hundreds of messages of just pure like vitriol like on them and just like hatred. And it's like, I am, that's it. I'm just a person. I'm playing cricket. I've abided by every rule that's been put in front of me, and I just want to play cricket. And it's been a challenge, but at the same time, I'm loving being a voice for trans people in general. I'm really taking that, you know, on my shoulder, because like I love being able to say, hey, we're not who you think we are. Like, we're not what the media paints. We are just people trying to live our life. And yeah, I know sport creates a different set of issues because we have segregated sports, men and women's sports. But a lot of the comments I've seen is like, yeah, but you have testosterone and you have, I don't. Like, trans women who medically transition don't have testosterone levels any higher than cis women. And that's just the fact. And that has a huge impact on, you know, your physical capabilities as an athlete and as an individual. And yeah, no, it's definitely been psychologically and mentally very, very challenging to know that I'm being used one way or another, good, bad, and different. It's why I like to talk to as many people as I can and get my voice out there as much as I can, because I feel like once people have spoken with me and actually had an honest conversation with me, there's a different opinion of who I am and who trans people are. And that's an experience I've had throughout my entire cricketing career in Canada. Even playing like my first like official tournament and things like that, I had people coming up and asking me questions about, hey, how does it feel mentally to transition? And like all these like deep questions that aren't the typical, you know, yeah, have you had the surgery kind of questions that we often get. And so I've absolutely loved this.
I always find it interesting because you have invested your time in women's sport. Right. I mean, obviously you want to play it, but my guess is, you know, Ray, who I think has evolved with the Canadian team, me and her have had a lot of chats before. I know how under-resourced women's cricket is in Canada. And I don't just mean that financially, although obviously financially, but, you know, Ray, coming from a more of a cricket background, can share knowledge with other women who don't have them. Athletically, they might be very good at the game, or skill, they might eventually learn the skills, but they don't have that kind of background that you do, right? You come from a background where you can help, you know, the other cricketers on your side, and, you know, even the opposition. You have the ability to chat to people and have those discussions with a lot more cricket knowledge. Whereas a lot of the people, as where you and I are more than aware of, a lot of the people who politicise this are not actually that big of a fan on women's sport, and they aren't involved with helping women's sport. And it must be annoying to be abused by people who weren't interested about women's sport before the trans issue at all. I mean, it's brought about more columns on women's sport than almost anything else I've ever seen, right? Like, where were all you people when I was out helping the under 16 women's team in Coburg back in the day, right? I don't remember everyone worrying about women's sport so much back in those days. So things have changed. So it must be weird for you to be like, well, wait a minute, you're saying that I'm ruining the thing that I'm out there helping people and training people and developing skills because I have all this experience that other people don't have.
Yeah, and that's something I've always tried to do is give back to the players who are just starting, or whether or not they're on my team or on the opposition team. Like, the growth of cricket is far more important than one individual, because through the growth of cricket, then we get more cricket. And who doesn't love cricket? So, like, it's just a cycle, right? And if you can give back, you always want to give back. But yeah, there's also, don't get me wrong, there's also been positivity, like Cricket Australia coming out and you know, saying, you know, that they stand by trans women and their trans policies that they've set up. You know, the ECB have even put out a statement. But, you know, there's been larger nations who have said that, you know, we don't believe with what the ICC have said, and we will continue to have our own domestic rules and laws that we apply to transgender people. And I think that's been really positive. Like, seeing that from Cricket Australia and even like the outgoing WACA CEO, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she even put out a statement basically saying that she's been playing with trans women since the 70s and it's never been an issue. And so you get these people inside cricketing circles who are saying, hey, this is not actually an issue. And so there's a bit of a juxtaposition between, you know, the playing conditions and I guess the outside world.
Neither of us are scientists, unless you are a scientist, and I apologize, but I'm certainly not a scientist. And I've studied this a lot. I studied it a lot, and then thankfully you finally came into cricket, so I have something to do with all this knowledge, because for years I was like, maybe it just won't happen. And when I was involved with women's cricket teams, there was quite often trans players involved, so I assumed that eventually this would happen. But it's something I looked at a lot of the sports science from it. And I've also talked to a lot of people in women's cricket about many issues, not about this issue.
Yeah.
There are the testosterone thing I think we've covered, and the fact you said, well, you're not hitting any sixes anymore. Sorry if I keep mentioning that. But you said your cardiovascular went down, your speed, your power, your strength. We don't need to bring up the fact you can't open a jar anymore. That is a little bit embarrassing for you as a person, really, at this point. So I wouldn't tell anyone. But there are advantages in cricket to, and I'll get all the medical terms, but going through male puberty gives you. And so I remember seeing Annabelle Sutherland bowling in a Women's Big Bash game that I was covering. And they were talking about how she was a fast bowler. And I was like, she's not bowling very fast. Like, by women's standards, she was a very, very slow bowler. But no one could hit her. And I realized that she's just got a very high release, like her brother and her father did as well. And, you know, she, because of that high release, she gets extra bounce. So if you were to, you know, go through puberty and become 6'5", there aren't many women cricketers who are that high. I'm going on a very basic one just because fast bowling works, but I know that with spinners, it's a very similar thing. If you get tall in women's cricket, you get used to just sort of rocking on the front foot and playing because you don't get the ball bouncing above. You're aware of these. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. There are advantages to going through the male system, let's say, when you're in your teenage years, you know, that can impact your success at professional cricket or professional sport, I should say.
Yeah, like when it comes to height, absolutely. I personally don't know because I'm pretty short.
Doesn't help you personally, not at all.
Yeah, like, but I completely understand that, like, when it comes to height, when it comes to Like, I'm also not a scientist. I haven't done, you know, a huge amount of research on it, and I really can only talk about my own personal experience. And that's what I do try and base a lot of what I talk on, because I don't want to talk for other people. But you're right. When it comes to height and a few other different things that do come more prevalently with the male puberty. Because definitely there are tall women and there are short men. Like there is a spectrum of things. But yeah, it's more prevalent to be tall if you've gone through male puberty. Completely agree. And that could have an advantage at the highest level. And I think that's why, you know, the ICC should be looking at it case by case. But again, this is just my personal opinion because everyone is different. And me being 5'7", you know, half the Australian team, I think, is taller than me, like the women's team. Like, you know, I know a lot of, you know, trans women who are shorter than me and some who are taller than me. Like, everyone's different, right?
No, of course. And I think that's another really interesting one. Of course, they've kind of gone away from a case-by-case situation in sport and made it a little bit one-size-fits-all. And, of course, in this case, you know, your size does not fit other people's size, as we just talked about. But there are issues with it. And because it's been so politicized, so much of it is talked about the nonsense side of it. I think the first time I ever heard about the whole idea that, like, I think it was in the 80s when people were saying, what if someone just transitions to being a woman so that they can win a bunch of gold medals? We haven't seen that, because transitioning to becoming a woman is an incredibly emotional thing and physical toll on your body and you know, all those sorts of things. Plus, you probably want to be a woman. You didn't do it to play cricket. You transitioned and went the other way around, right? So I can understand that, but you can also understand the impact of things like, not quite the case with Canadian cricket, but, you know, professional contracts, scholarships in American sport is one that they talk about a lot. You can understand why we, at the very time we want to promote women playing sport, that there is this other issue that is coming in, even though you feel like a woman and you feel like you should be able to play. You can understand both sides of it because you're living it.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of it. And I do understand on a base level of, you know, just looking at it purely without facts, without anything, and just looking at it from a, this is what we heard on the internet. And I say that because, like, I'm, you know, yes, I went through male puberty. Yes, I was relatively strong. However, now, like, if you just look at the pure facts, that there is no advantage. Yes, I'm shorter. Okay, so I don't have that particular advantage. But I don't particularly see why it's such an issue. When you look at it without the influence of the loudest voices on the internet, and I want to say that in the most, like, you know, meaningful way, because, you know, trans people are also people, and most of the time we want to play community level and social level, and we just want to go have fun with our friends, and that's the bit that's being stripped away at the moment. And yeah, elite sports are different, and that's why I think a case by case is required, because not one shoe does fit all.
That's why you went through all the testing, right? As well, like, that is why it existed.
Exactly.
You know, you understood that, and, you know, you might not have liked all the questioning and everything else, because it was weirdly personal. And, you know, there's some place in Dubai with your body fat index that, you know, will be there forever. And, you know, that's not the case of, you know, Ben Duckett doesn't have to worry about the ICC having a file on his body fat index. Like, you understood that it was different, and that it's a different situation. But you're also saying that this is how I would feel. You did what they asked. They knew who you were very, very clearly. It took them 6 months to make the decision. You play in one tournament. You don't score a lot of runs. And then they change the regulations anyway. You must feel a little bit confused of why you were allowed to play in the first place. Why not, you know, why that even happened?
Yeah, yes and no. I'm not confused in the sense that I knew they weren't having another board meeting until November of 2023. So when you look at the actual political side of the ICC, they had a board meeting November of 2022, and this issue was brought up, and no moves were made on it because there wasn't any players. that were like in the system. And so when I spoke with the ICC, because I spoke with them significantly throughout 2023, and we had several meetings, and one of them was, this is what we're thinking about doing with the rules in the future. What do you think? And this meeting revolved around, we're going to most likely make it that you need to have testosterone levels under 2.5 mL per liter, and you need to have had that for 24 months. And this was the meeting I had with them in June of 2023. And so we talked about safety, we talked about integrity, we talked about, you know, all the bullet points that they put into their press release. However, fast forward 5 months, and yeah, after what I played, and suddenly they've changed their mind on how they're going to go about governing a new rule. And they just said, nah, you can't play. Trans women who have gone through any sort of puberty, which is 99.9% of trans women, because having access to puberty blockers and, you know, supportive family and all the rest of it is just highly unlikely. So, okay, they've changed their decision, and I still haven't had an explanation of why. They've said they've used science. I've asked to see the science.
Me too. I've
been presented with the science.
I also asked and I haven't heard anything. So, yeah. I can understand. And so you kind of retire after that. I don't, you know, I mean, you don't really have a choice, I suppose, at that stage. Is that fair?
Yeah, retire is a loose word. I think I described it in my Instagram.
You retired in the Pakistani captain kind of way of retiring, where someone calls you, you're back.
Yeah, that's it. And I did state that it seems like my international career is over. And I say that because I still want to play as much cricket as I can. And whether or not that's franchise cricket, Cricket Australia have said the Women's Big Bash is, you know, an opportunity for a trans woman. Like, we will not stop based upon the ICC's regulations. I hope moving forward that I can find my way into franchise cricket, just not international cricket, unless the laws change.
Yeah. You, I don't know how to frame this question, but I'm trying to get it as accurate as I can. Cricket has been a big part of your life. You've played it from a young age. You have always loved the sport. How does it kind of feel to be singled out by the sport, and shunned? Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. It feels like, as we talked about before, that you went back to it because it was a thing that you loved, and then this has now happened.
Yeah. So from September, like from when I played the ICC's tournament, I didn't pick up a bat, didn't pick up a ball for like months on end. I couldn't watch it. I just really, really struggled with, I guess having that love taken away, because literally it was like, no, Danielle, you cannot play. And it's like, hey, can we not? I stayed up all night and watched the Australia West Indies series. I've been watching the Australia South Africa women's test. I've watched the England India series that's going on at the moment. So like there's still that love and there's still like that desire to watch and play. I'm actually in Brazil at the moment and I'll be playing down here locally. I still plan on playing as much as I can.
You start playing cricket with your father in the backyard, and you know, you've come on this incredible journey as a human being, let alone as a cricketer. Even though, you know, you just said you're still watching cricket. Like, cricket is, they can stop you playing for Canada, right? And they might be able to stop you playing franchise level cricket at a certain point. But cricket is a part of you, and also, you know, you are a part of it. And how does it kind of feel to be knowing that cricket is going to be with you, that you've come back to the game and you've gone through all this nonsense and things have happened. You've had opportunities that you wouldn't have had, you know, elsewhere, but that you're still in a position where, you know, I suppose the best way of putting this, I'm trying to think of the perfect way of putting it, but cricket is a part of you, right? And that is one thing that there's no regulation that can stop you from loving and being part of cricket, right?
No, and cricket will always hold a place, you know, really, really close to my heart, like in my DNA per se. It's what I did every weekend. Tuesday, Thursday nights, out at training. Like, it was every week. Come the winter, we're doing indoor sessions. Like it is part of, you know, who I am. And I think, yeah, from a really young age, like, yeah, learning how to play cricket and then watching the 05 Ashes, watching the 03 World Cup in South Africa and doing all this, like, while mum and dad were sleeping and I had a black and white TV in my room. And, you know, cricket is such an integral part of my life. And, yeah, nothing's going to change that. And I hope that's the case for so many other, like, trans women out there who have reached out to me and said, hey, cricket's my passion and I've grown up with it and I don't know what to do now. It's like, yeah, okay, just keep the love of cricket because, you know, that is, you know, something that we've all loved from a young age generally. And why not, right?
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.